And welcome into another edition of the B Squared podcast as it is August 6th and the Chicago Cubs have the best record in the National League and are tied for the best record in baseball. It must be a COVID year. Alongside Brian Beto, I'm Jordan Bernfield. And Beto, I'm thrilled that the Cubs are playing well. I think it's partially that they're playing a weaker schedule, but 10-2 is 10-2. And I'd rather be 10-2 than not 10-2, and the Cubs are 10-2.
They're winning the games they're supposed to. They're playing much tighter baseball than we saw the majority of the last couple of years. And I think I might have said it on this podcast, or at least in passing, I promise I said it somewhere, that to me, the key to the Central was beating up the clearly inferior opponents. Because you had, at the beginning of the year, you had four teams potentially in contention on paper, the Reds, Cubs, Cardinals, and Brewers. So you might see those matchups even out over the course of even a smaller sample. But if you have the opportunity to beat up on the Pirates, the Royals, and the Tigers, for example, I know the Tigers are off to an okay start, but that probably won't be sustainable. That's roughly 30% of your schedule. And if you could win 12 or 13 games out of those 17 that you play against those three teams, you set yourself up to be in the top tier of that division, even if you do tread water against those teams. The Cubs are 4-2 against the NL Central so far. But you really set yourself ahead, and they weren't able to do that the last couple of seasons, and they did so. So, yeah, they've played weaker competition, but they won 10 games. It's a smaller sample size this year. Banking wins is more important than ever, and the Cubs have been able to do so. So far, it's been a great start.
It's been a great start. They're 10-2. The schedule has helped. The starting pitching has been amazing so far. Really, the two games they've lost were two games where they did not get great starting pitching. Apart from that, they've had great starting pitching literally every start, so much so that now that Jose Quintana is starting to get close to returning, there's discussion about him going to the bullpen, since the bullpen has been an unmitigated disaster to this point in the season so far. I think it's not surprising that Kyle Hendricks has pitched well, because seemingly every year we have these discussions about, oh, it's so shocking that Kyle Hendricks is great again. The guy has been great for most of his career with the Cubs. I don't think it's so surprising that Kyle Hendricks has been as good as he's been. I don't think it's surprising that Yu Darvish, for the most part, has picked up where he left off from the second half of last year and has pitched well. Obviously, he had one bad start the first weekend of the season, but after that, he's been pretty lights out since then, granted against not-so-good teams, but it still counts. John Lester has looked way better than I expected him to look, which is a great thing to see. Alec Mills has been good, and Tyler Chatwood has been phenomenal. Like, I was sort of half joking on Twitter recently that Tyler Chatwood would be the Cy Young Award winner if the season had ended on Monday, as it was rumored to possibly do. And I honestly think that he would have been. I mean, he's been fantastic. But the one thing that I would say is that I know that everyone's saying, like, hey, they're 10-2. Look at this. This is great. They probably locked up a playoff spot because of how short the season is by starting 10-2. But I think when you look at the reality of what they are, my concern is that there is no way that they could go all the way, even in a weird season like this, with a bullpen as bad as this is. Like, it's going to have to be better, and I don't know where that's coming from.
I know, and it's funny because we did the podcast, last week, right before the season started, and at least my concern was the actual starting pitching depth. I thought we might get a step forward from Chatwood, and I thought Mills would be fine at the back end. Lester was really good in the first game. Second game, he labored, but this is what he does. He's a gamer. He figures it out when he doesn't have his best, and he's done that. And the bullpen, you knew it would be a trial by error, and you thought that in a 60-game season that could hurt them, because they might figure it out, but you don't have much time to do so. So they've been able to win games while trying to figure things out. So while it's discouraging where the bullpen's at, it's also encouraging that it hasn't cost them anything yet. So I think they've started to help settle into some certain roles. We've seen some really good things from Wick. Jeffress has been really good. I think Ryan Tepera, Casey Sadler, those are guys that, while not lighting up the radar guns, not going to intimidate the opposition, they have potential to be guys. So I think they're starting to sort things out while playing 83% winning baseball, which has been great.
Yeah, the one thing
it's a big concern.
Yeah, the one thing I would say, and I don't disagree with anything that you said, but the one thing that I would say is that they are fortunate that they have had, I mean, they basically hit a lot of home runs. They haven't scored a ton of runs, but they've hit timely home runs. They've scored when they needed to. They've been fortunate that they have had larger leads in the ninth inning by virtue of the fact that they've scored a lot of like seventh, eighth inning runs, like a home run in the seventh or the eighth that has basically won them the games because they're giving up seemingly two or three runs in the ninth inning every day, which is not sustainable. But the one thing that I am concerned with is, I mean, Craig Kimbrel is so bad right now that mentally there's no way that he's in a good place. And I don't know if he's fixable in a short season. Like, he might be fixable in a long season. If this were something in April that they could work with him in side sessions, pitch him in the sixth inning, do whatever they had to do with him from a mechanic standpoint. I know that they're working on the mechanics with him, but theoretically, they'd have a couple of months to try to get him right. And right now, he looks like he's done. And I don't know if he's done, but he looks done. And if he is done, and I'm not trying to say that it isn't possible he could get better. Certainly he could. But if he's done, they really have no option. I mean, Jeffress is a solid pitcher. Rowan Wick is a solid pitcher, but these are not guys you would consider for the ninth inning on a team that has aspirations to go all the way unless you had to, right? So I just think that because of the situation that we're in, they can't go get anyone realistically because there's not even guarantees that next week will happen in baseball. So you can't go trading assets to get players when you don't know what's going to happen. So this is probably right. What it is. And I just don't know. Like, I'm thrilled they're 10-2. I'm thrilled that they're playing well. But I just look at it and I'm like, it doesn't feel the same as it has in other years where they've been good because I felt like they had the pieces to win. I feel like if this team were in a playoff series and you're in a high leverage moment and you're bringing in Casey Sadler in the seventh inning, no offense to Casey Sadler, I don't feel good about that. Okay. And right now, I don't feel good about Kimbrel in any situation.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when it comes to Kimbrel, I'm kind of confused because, well, the first game was a disaster. Second game was bad, too. The third game, he comes in, and he's throwing 97, and he's throwing strikes, and his breaking ball, which is knuckle curve, had been one of the most unhittable pitches in baseball when he was right. He's throwing for strikes, and he's still getting hit, so I'm like, what's going on here? So the velo is not where it was 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago, but 97 is nothing to sneeze at. So I'm just curious if something can be done to correct that. And credit Ross, because I know he put him out in a safe situation, but he pulled him. It'd be pretty easy to just roll the dice and say, hey, I went with my big money closer that's got however many saves in my career. He pulled him. And then secondly, to your other point, just about the group and, you know, a playoff situation. You're right. I mean, it's a flaw and it's something that it's that you don't feel great about where they're at if they have to ride this group out. But outside the Dodgers, who isn't flawed in some capacities we've talked about
here. Yeah.
So, I mean, every team's looking at like, look at the Central right now. If you're the Brewers, are you comfortable rolling out that lineup? No. Are you the Cardinals? They aren't healthy right now. They've played 5 games this year. The Reds have been flawed. And even the Braves, they had the injury to Soroka. They've had some inconsistencies. So while I agree, it's definitely hold your breath. You're not going to be building 5-run leads every night. At least they have some time to try to navigate and try to either add within, get some surprise appearances. I mean, we'll see. But I don't know. It's definitely a glaring issue, but for right now, just win, baby.
Yeah, no, I agreed. And it's just nice that they're playing baseball and that they're healthy, and that's certainly not been the case for the Cardinals, who they'll play as we record tomorrow on Friday the 7th. So We'll see how that goes, because I have no idea what to expect with regard to that series or playing them at all. The one thing I agree with what you're saying, a lot of the teams are flawed. The Cubs are flawed. Maybe they're less flawed than others, which helps them. One thing I would say that I've been impressed with, and I feel like, because you and I talked about on the podcast last week, there's not a whole lot you can take from a weird season like this in terms of what it means for the future and all that stuff. Maybe the one exception to that, Beto, and tell me what you think of this. So far, and it's not just because they're winning, I like what I'm seeing from David Ross. He doesn't just sit there. He is making obvious moves that should be made, and sometimes managers don't make them, right? Like, I got why he put Kimbrel into that game against the Royals. You're facing a team that's bad. You have a three-run lead. You have a closer who's been struggling. You're trying to give him an easy landing space to come in and try to get a save that should be easy to make him feel good, right? But when it's clear that he's not going to have it and he's blowing it, instead of pulling the dusty, I hate to say, and just sitting on your hands and waiting for the game to get blown, he went out there and took him out and put in somebody else. And I don't know if I agree with him in terms of my level of confidence in Kyle Ryan, but I liked that he went to somebody else. So, like, at least he went to somebody else. I don't personally have the confidence in Kyle Ryan that evidently the organization does. I think
I'm with you.
There's must be something I'm missing
down to like 80.
Yeah. Like, I'm missing something there about Kyle Ryan, cause I don't get it. But the point is, so far, I like the way Ross is managing the team. They seem to respect the hell out of him, which I think we expected. And I think that, I mean, it's not a shock to say this, but I think he has the chance to be a pretty good manager.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I don't want to, you know, get too excited over the whole 12 games, but I think there's a fine line between, I think when you go on like Twitter, everyone's like, if you praise him, it's like, oh gosh, you praised him after 12 games. Like, oh my gosh, they played nobody. And then, but at the same time, it's like, you can still give the guy credit for the things he's done so far. There's encouraging signs. You mentioned one of them. He's already learned. Like, I think I was ready to go nuts on Ross when he didn't pull Kimbrel against Cincinnati.
Right.
But then he does do it a couple games later. So, I mean, he's learning. He's going to make some mistakes. But there's some things that I like. He's not adhering to what we've seen maybe the past couple of years. And I'm not taking any shots at Joe, but he's letting Nico Orner develop. He's starting him most games. He's not just automatically inserting Albert Almora into the lineup against the lefty. He's letting Orner try to play center field, nor is he leading off Almora. So things like that are small corrections that seemed kind of glaring as issues. He's already corrected, and he's put this team in the best position to succeed. So that thing's good. And then the thing I'll raise, like we talked about, not putting too much stock into future stuff based on this year, but I think what I've seen in even a small sample out of Wilson Contreras is on a player level is the one thing that's really stood out to me. Offensively, he's got one of the hardest hit rates in all of baseball. But even like in a small sample, his framing has improved quite a bit, which is crazy to think about, which might be obsolete in 2 years if they go to a robotic strike zone. But I think like that to me has been super encouraging and turned him into the well-rounded catcher. He's always had a good arm and pitchers like throwing to him, whatnot. But if he can improve that part of his game, which has been a tough part to improve for catchers over their careers and statistically proven so, what he's been able to do has been really impressive to me.
You are so right about that because, again, like I'm trying to preface all my commentary by saying that we're speaking of observations we've seen so far, but again, I don't think you can glean a whole lot in this shortened season for obvious reasons. But that's something, and I was talking about this with a couple of friends recently, it feels like Wilson Contreras is becoming a superstar that we thought that he could be, but I didn't know if he would get there just because it's really hard to be a really good catcher and a really good hitter, but he is becoming legitimately both. And what you said about the framing, like, he was bailing Yu Darvish out in that one bad start because he couldn't find the strike zone, and Contreras is getting him calls that he probably did not deserve. And this is not something you would have seen from Contreras before. And maybe, I mean, if this trajectory continues for Wilson Contreras, I've been one of the guys that's been not wanting to trade him, but wondering if he was someone that if they can't win going forward, he might net you big value. And I'm still open to listening if I'm the Cubs, because he could net you monster value. But there's a part of me now that feels like he is not replaceable. There are very few catchers who have his skill set. And to have one is hard. I mean, you can't just find somebody else that's got the offensive acumen, the cannon arm, and if his framing is now better and he's a really good defensive catcher, which has been kind of the knock on him in his career, then you're talking about one of the most valuable players in the National League. Like, I know that sounds crazy, but that might be true if this continues. And so that's really been nice to see. Like, I've always liked Wilson's fire, but I always kind of felt like he needed to be reined in a little bit. And I don't know if David Ross deserves the credit for that or not, but he is looking really, really good.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he even self-diagnosed, not working hard enough, but I want to say after 2018, he said, like, yeah, I feel like we just kind of assumed, and I assumed that I was just going to take that natural step and maybe didn't put that in that extra time. And this is him saying it, not speculation. So I think maybe he's maturing in that regard and has been doing that and putting in the work, and it's been quite obvious. And we talked about in the first podcast is getting production, lengthening the lineup and getting those like meaty hitters in the middle of the order. And I know Schwarber's had a couple, maybe a rough few games, but at the plate, between him and Contreras, they've really provided that lift in the middle of the lineup. And the Cubs, as a result, have been one of the best offenses in baseball when they really haven't gotten a ton from Chris Bryant. And Jason Hayward had a homer the other day. He's really done nothing. But
right, Rizzo's Contreras, hit a couple homers.
The order have been huge.
I mean, really none of them have. Yeah. They've scored 63 runs, which is the most in the division, which is sort of an odd thing to say because, you know, the Cardinals have played five games, so it's not equal. But the point is, you know, there's
quick math, that's over five a game.
Yeah, they're scoring runs, but really no one offensively has been great so far. I mean, Javi's hit a few homers and he had that, you know, the play yesterday that everybody on Twitter was freaking out about. But really offensively, he's looked a little wild at the plate to me, swinging at bad pitches again. I mean, Bryant obviously has had a little bit of a slow start and it was sick. I mean, Rizzo has had a few homers.
Kipnis has been good.
Kipnis has been good. Do you know he's from Northbrook?
He's been really good.
There should be an over under on number of times it is mentioned that Jason Kipnis is from Northbrook, which is cool as a guy from Deerfield. I'm just saying, like, I think we got it. We know. Very cool.
I know.
It's great. Let's faced him in high school. Well, good for me. But like, we got it. We know he's from Northbrook. So
yeah, he's been hitting.
Yeah.
And that's another thing I'll credit Ross for too. And I know people are pining in for maybe more playing time, and maybe so, maybe give him some more shots at DH, things like that. But you also have to credit for Ross for putting him in situations where that are good matchups for him. And they've done exactly that, and they've called out the matchups where they feel like Kipnis is going to be able to exploit a certain right-hander, and he's delivered.
Yeah.
In those matchups. So we'll see if it continues. But either way, it's been a really good start for him. It's been good to see.
So – at this point, I think the Cubs obviously are off to a great start. It feels like because of the way they've started. I mean, they've already played a fifth of the season and they're playing 833 baseball. I mean, it feels like unless they completely bottom out, they're going to the playoffs. Like, you start this well a fifth of the way through, they would have to really stink for the next 6 weeks for them not to be in the playoffs. So it feels like they're going to be a team. Now, obviously, they're going to have to play well the rest of the way. But given the expanded playoff field, it feels like already they look like a playoff team. I think now, I mean, assuming that they can get most of the games in, because I think we are all under the reality now that they will not end up playing 60 games for one reason or another. Hopefully, it's not that they're sick, and hopefully, it's not that anyone's sick, but it seems like they're going to be canceled games because of rainouts or COVID-related situations. But we said it, I know we talked about this last week, the schedule sets up for them. They have a lot of games against weaker teams, and you know, because, and I don't blame Lorenzo Cain, I think he did a smart thing, but the Brewers don't have him.
Yeah,
that helps the Cubs. I mean, things are setting up for the Cubs to have a pretty good 60-game season.
They are. And they even go in against St. Louis tomorrow if they play these three games. The Cardinals are shorthanded. No Molina, no DeJong, no Carlos Martinez. And on top of it, they haven't played in over a week at that point. So that, I don't know if you call it rusty, but still, it makes a difference not playing live competition. You're not getting in a flow. So you run into the Cardinals at the ideal time. And they haven't caught a lot of breaks, the Cubs, the last couple of years. So I'm not going to apologize for the breaks they've caught so far. You give them credit. Yeah, of course, there's probably a little bit of luck as far as like who's catching what and contacting, you know, coronavirus and all that. But you got to give them credit because it seems like they're doing all the right things on top of it.
Yeah.
So the process, the results have been indicative in the process in the regard. So hopefully they can keep doing what they're doing. And winning certainly helps because I've been curious about for these teams that maybe struggle like the Royals, the Pirates out of the gate, they get 40 games in, they have no chance of making it. Do more guys opt out? Do they kind of stop adhering to the protocols because they really don't care? And I don't want to call out the Royals and Pirates specifically, but it's something that I wonder. And I think, you know, the more you win early on, I think the more disciplined and strict the Cubs will be. And yeah, when it comes to those regards, and we'll see what happens. But I agree. I think they're headed at this point. They've banked so many wins that it would be take a big disaster for them to not at least advance to the postseason in some capacity.
All right. So final thing before we sign out on this, of all the things that we've seen so far, I think we knew Tyler Chatwood had talent. He just, and we saw last year, he was starting to put some of that together. So I'm a little surprised, but I'm not totally surprised that Tyler Chatwood has looked good, right? Like there's a reason they signed him. They didn't say like, oh, yeah, let's go give.
I loved the signing.
Right. Like they didn't say, let's go give $45 million to a pitcher who completely sucks. Right. Like they're smart. We're seeing what Tyler Chatwood could be. Alec Mills, on the other hand, I don't know what to make of this. Like he's looked really good. He's definitely got some of the Kyle Hendricks in him that he's able to locate and change speeds and move the ball and confuse hitters. He has done this at random times when they've used him in the past where he's had some decent starts and spot starts. Is he good? I don't know. Like he's obviously pitched well, but like, I don't know if he's good, but he has been good. I mean, what do you think?
It's probably somewhere in between, right?
Yeah.
So I think the expectations were low and he's far exceeded those. Is he as good as that? I mean, whatever his ERA is, like 2, probably not, but maybe better than what we thought because it's clear he knows how to pitch. And he mentioned the Hendricks thing. Like he's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing up there. He can locate.
Yeah.
He changes speeds well. And that's great. And, you know, they're not asking for him to be a top end of the rotation guy. So when you look at, I know we're focused on this year still, but you look at next year and I know you have the vesting option for Lester, but Quintana's, you know, good, probably gone. And Chatwood's a free agent. It's just funny because I've kind of semi-jokingly talked about extending him. Who would have thought we'd be at the point where Chatwood wouldn't want the extension because he wants free agency? How crazy is that?
Right.
But Mills is a guy that you could look at the mix, you know, not just this year, but in the future if they feel like he can contribute at least at the back end of the rotation. But it's been good. They've needed this revelation from the starters because they haven't gotten it. They haven't. Not that they developed Alec Mills, because I know he came through Kansas City, but they've churned over so many guys between the rotation and the bullpen, and none of them have panned out. They haven't struck lightning in a bottle with any of them. Hopefully they finally get lucky. Obviously, they did with Arrieta a few years ago, but the last couple of years have been a different story.
Yeah, I mean, post-2016, for whatever reason, they've just not been able to put together the group that has allowed their starting pitching to really be great. And even though they've had a lot of success between 15 and 20, they have not, oddly, the year that they won the World Series, their pitching was great the entire season. I mean, amazing. In 15, it was really good most of the season. But they have won a lot of games the last 3 years despite really not having great starting pitching at all, which they deserve a lot of credit for. And I don't know if this rotation is sustainable, but I have to say it's been fun to watch. They have pitched well. And listen, in a year where nothing is normal, pretty much nothing has been good, and everything is mostly a debacle, and that's not really overstating it, in the year of 2020, at least in something as small and as not important as this is, we have something to smile about, right? Like, when I tune into the Cubs games, even though there's nobody there, and it's funny to make fun of the cardboard cutouts behind the plate for half inning a game, which is the obligatory amount, it's an escape. This year, like, people always talk about sports being an escape. And normally I'm like, well, I don't know if it really is for people. For me, this year, watching the baseball the last 2 weeks has been a true escape from just the awfulness of 2020.
I completely agree. And I'm even already used to the cardboard cutouts, no fans. Like, I don't even really think about it as much anymore. I'm used to it. Yes, it'll be great when it's people back in. But I'm focused on the game. It's been great to watch. And the Cubs provided a lot of value, not just, like, hitting it and pitching it, but they're playing sharp. They seem like they're enjoying themselves, which I, as a fan, like. I think defensively, what to me in 2016, we talked about the great things, and I hate going back to it all the time, but they were historically great defensively. And they had a lot of the same personnel the last couple of years, but haven't been as crisp. This year, they've been really crisp so far. And that's been fun to watch. So I think the small details and doing the little things and some of the stuff that maybe was at times overrated while we were growing up, I feel like has been underrated the last couple of years. And I think they're doing some of that stuff again. And it's just been a fun escape, like you mentioned, in the first 12 games. We'll see how sustainable it is, but it's been a good start.
All you got to do is sustain it for 60 games if you even get there. So
right.
You know, they've played well through a fifth of the season. We'll see what happens. But that will wrap up this week's podcast. Normally at the end, we have a prediction. So are they going undefeated next week or what's the deal, Beto?
Man, I think that I was surprised. I think they exceeded my expectations even for the first time. I don't even think I would have said that too. Yeah, I mean, they're going to sweep Kansas City tonight. Hope this tweet age as well. And then they're going to obviously... Hey, Lewis isn't ready. And they have nobody playing. Stubby Clapp's going to come back and play. Bo Hart's going to come out. They're going to have to sign these guys to fill out the roster.
Yeah.
So we're going to sweep them this weekend. And yeah, I think we're going to go 4-0.
All right. John Mabry is probably coming out of retirement to play for the Cardinals.
14-2. One game shy of the 85 Bears.
Fine. Bears. As you would say, don't mean a thing without the ring. So,
and without the ring.
All right. For Brian Beto, I'm Jordan Bernfield. Thanks so much for listening to the Beast Squared podcast. We will be back next week, and hopefully the Cubs are still winning. Stay healthy, everybody.